Hey, welcome back to Endpoint TV. I'm your host, Ron Jacobs, and today I'm joined by Dan... I forgot your last name. Yeah, okay, say it.
Peasons.
Peasons. Dan Peasons. Okay. And you're with Red Prairie.
Yep.
Now, what is Red Prairie?
Red Prairie is a global supply chain provider, so our focus is to provide end-to-end supply chain logistics for larger companies. So starting with warehousing, transportation, labor management, and then the retail suite, and then also to do the business analysis and performance management on the back end.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. Okay, so I'm Contoso Manufacturing, mm-hmm. and I have a supply chain. It means I got suppliers I buy parts from to make my widgets, and I got workers in the warehouse, and I got stuff to manage. I would go to you guys and say, I want to buy your package, and you're going to set this whole thing up for me. Is that it?
Yeah. So if you have that, we basically say, okay, what's your order management system? We integrate with that into our warehouse. We manage all the user interaction, all the staging lanes, the deliveries, the inbound and outbound of the warehouse. We do all the transportation planning, so we plan, what's the most cost-effective way to get freight onto the trucks from point A to point B.
Ah, okay.
And then also manage the labor in the warehouse. So, when did Bob punch in? When did Bob punch out?
Yeah.
And, if Bob's picking this item up and putting it onto this truck, did he follow the best path through the warehouse, or did he go and, take 8 sidetracks around?
Really? Wow, you even did that kind of stuff. So you put like a, GPS on Bob so you can see where he went?
Oh, a little bit. I mean, there's a little bit of the RFID and pieces of our solutions that play into that. There's also the whole retail side, so we actually have the point of sale equipment, the retail management inside the store, figuring out, is there enough inventory on the shelves? Is, inventory at a reorder point?
So if I had the Contoso outlet store, mm-hmm. Then you could provide that side of it as well.
Correct.
Ah, that sounds like a lot of software.
Yeah. We've got, our suite has, I believe, about 20 different pieces of software that comprise it.
Wow.
And that's kind of where the Microsoft piece of the puzzle, or the key one that, kind of focusing on today fits in, is that we wanted to develop an orchestration platform that can take long-running processes like a product recall, or an availability of promise order for, getting requests in, and basically have a single system that you can design a workflow around that says, all right, I need to first, we'll use a recall as an example.
Yeah.
This product went bad, we need to recall it. So the first order is to tell the warehouse to not put that into any more orders. So, the first call goes out to the warehouse system to do that. Then 50 sub-requests or sub-workflows have to be started, one for every store, so that each store takes that stuff off the shelves and we verify that they actually did take all the stuff off the shelves.
Okay.
And then, from there, each store gets transportation coordinated to bring that inventory back to the warehouse for destruction or for whatever.
Right.
So, and then, the workflow is kind of coordinating the, automated processes of, the web services talking back to each one of our backend systems and the human parts so that, if Bob has to manually tell us that he actually has, 40 cases of, recalled flu vaccine or something like that, that he says, oh, well, I only have 20, but the system can't tell us that. He has to send it to us in an email or go online and fill out a form or something like that.
Okay. Now, you guys did a demo like this way back in the day. Wasn't it a couple of years ago?
Yep.
It was Windows Azure, mm-hmm. early Azure demo, right?
Very early Azure demo.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So... and that was, that was back when I think when Azure had workflow.
Yeah.
Which it didn't. It doesn't now. So, but it will soon when mm-hmm. we get .NET 4 on there.
Yeah.
Okay. So today we're here talking about, because you've been working on this orchestration platform. You had to, you are one of the first customers to really get deep into workflow 4, mm-hmm. And so. You've been through the pain and the glory, and you got something. Is it shipping yet, or is it? Where do you guys stand with this?
It's almost ready to ship. I think we're about 6 weeks out from final delivery.
Ah, cool. Okay, so where should we begin? Why don't you? You want to show me something, or you want to run it, or you want to just tell me how it works first?
Sure. I will explain a little bit how it works.
So, okay.
The idea, at least from a ideal perspective, is that you have a business process owner that determines that, you know, we need a workflow to do X.
Okay.
They'll sit down with a developer or one of our product teams or customization teams, mm-hmm. and their job is to then take that conceptual diagram and convert it into a Windows Workflow 4 model
okay.
based on you know, combination of standard activities and custom activities that we've written for the platform.
Okay.
Then we decided with Workflow 3.5 that Visual Studio itself was too difficult of a medium for these process, you know, these customization people to work with.
Okay.
So we decided to rehost at that point and build essentially our own mini development studio for these processes.
So you have your own. You took the Workflow Designer, mm-hmm. rehosted it in your own development studio.
Yep.
Okay. Do you have that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see that.
And then what we do is the development studio is then wired up with the infrastructure
okay.
so that it basically takes that workflow and builds it into a little package, which is kind of similar to an IIS web deployment package, but with some added features.
Okay.
And then deploys it up to our hosting platform, which is similar to how, you know, AppFabric will kind of host workflows and things like that.
Yeah.
But the significant difference is the Workflow Foundation and AppFabric, this version, lacked app domain isolation for multiple versions and a couple of key features that we needed to be able to guarantee.
Right.
So we decided to do our own hosting model and actually work with the workflow service hosts and the processes and all the low-level stuff.
So you got to learn all the low-level bits.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that's okay. But you know what? I think, you know, I feel like a judge on American Idol or something. I mean, I think, hey, I'm a fan, okay? You know, so I think it's cool that the way this stuff is composed, you can plug in at the layer you want, you mm-hmm. know? So, you know, a lot of people are just going to use AppFabric and host their workflows there, and it's going to be fine for them. And you guys said, well, yeah, we need this, we need that, it's not there. But they built the pieces in such a way where you could just take the same workflow service host that AppFabric is going to use, you can plug it in and use it in your thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I like that.
Yeah.
All right. So, do you want to show me something?
Sure.
Let's see how it.
So, I've got a running server going here in the background. You can kind of see that it's getting instances and it's doing a lot of the workflows in the background. It's looking for expired instances and runnable commands and things like that in the background. But, you know, bottom line is that we have a real server here that's sitting to respond.
Okay.
So, if we looked at the Process Studio. Debug console happens to be on for this. We're actually connecting to that server.
Okay.
And it starts up our little mini solution designer, which is kind of a simplified version of that. We can still open Visual Studio projects. So if somebody wants, if a dev wants to start in Visual Studio with something complicated, they can.
Oh, okay.
And we restrict what they're allowed to edit.
You know, right.
They can't go and edit code files or things like that. But if they're just working on a workflow, but they still need the compile types and things like that, this gives them the ability to do that.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then we have a little bit of a different solution view where instead of doing like the full Visual Studio solution with all the trees and structures,
right.
we just kind of regroup things into logical compositions
okay.
and also pull in items that Visual Studio would probably just ignore. Like we look at a custom report format that we have for our infrastructure product
right.
that our solution knows how to push out to our reporting tools.
Oh, okay.
So we can pull those things in and all the, you know, Visual Studio sees them as loose extra files and doesn't really know what to do with them.
Yeah.
But we know what to do with them, so we can group them in and look at some of the metadata and make sure stuff's matching up and things like
that. That's cool. Okay.
So this is a rehosted Visual Studio experience. So you've got your toolbox here. We've got a simple workflow that just, you know, does something, does some write lines, you know, does a parallel task. This, you know, order product check can go through and look for something, and it's either going to try to do a send to a service or a timeout. You know, this isn't actually a very useful workflow, but it's kind of the demo we use to show,
sure.
you know, okay, the system works. You still have, you know, all the property editing, the toolbox. A lot of this stuff is all stuff that came out of the box for Visual Studio, which I think
right.
for Workflow 4 was fantastic, that
yeah.
we didn't have to go back through and try to re-engineer all of this.
That's cool.
There was a little bit of pain involved because we actually tried to do application domain isolation for this,
uh-huh.
and that's actually pretty complicated to get all this stuff working. So, you know, people are looking for something that behaves like Visual Studio in terms of you could only see the assemblies that belong to the workflow and reload things and stuff like that. That's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Or not necessarily a problem, but it's going to be a development
it's
challenge.
It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't say that most people are actually really trying to do that in the end, because most people, I think, develop one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't want the ability, because what we realized is that if we did a studio like this, you'd have to close the app and restart it to start working on a different workflow package.
Oh.
Which, you know, if you're switching between two or three of them at a time, would be annoying for the developer, the process owner. So we had to, you know, protect ourselves from that, which is why we did this model instead.
Okay, okay.
But, you know, so something different from Visual Studio that you'd see is that, you know, we have this happy little create package thing that runs, and you may have missed it on the bottom, but it was creating a package real quickly here.
Okay. It did it so fast we couldn't even see it.
Yeah, if you look on the on the bottom. In the background, it's actually compiling and building the package.
Okay.
We can also do a publish, in which case the system's going to warn us, you know, if we have the same package version, do we want to increment it?
Oh, so you kind of built versioning into your thing. Yeah.
Which is helpful because a lot of times it's a problem. Now, actually, we're making a slight enhancement to this to be able to say yes, no, or republish. So if you're doing a really minor change that doesn't affect the workflow, although there's like 8 extra warnings we're going to provide because
you
really shouldn't recommend it to do this. But you could theoretically republish the exact same one.
Okay, right.
So I'm just going to say no because we've already actually got it running. But so essentially when the developer would be done with this, they'd do that publish. It would move it up to the server. Now, that actually doesn't make the workflow active in our world. What it actually does is it puts it into a repository.
Okay.
And then the developer, or I'm sorry, the IT admin would come along and deploy that to what we call sites, which are kind of like logical clusters.
Okay.
So the idea is that you could actually build test sites and deployment sites, kind of like, you know, Azure kind of has in terms of an idea.
Oh, right.
And then I can deploy to test.
Okay.
Test has mock services. And then after the process admin or the testers come through and say, yeah, this workflow is exactly what we expected to do, move it to production.
Okay.
And then what we kind of have is an extractable concept of settings that go along with that. So the IT admin can deploy to the test environment with all the, you know, SMTP addresses of the test servers and things like that.
Right.
And then deploy with a new set of settings to the production servers without actually changing the contents of the package. So it's kind of that separation of roles concepts.
Cool. All right.
We also did a little bit with security, which I don't have a demo of right now, but security is actually kind of a parallel stack to this. So the IT admins can actually go through and apply security to packages even before they exist.
Okay.
Or, you know, after they exist, but it doesn't actually affect the context. So the dev doesn't have to worry about, you know, who is this authorized for and everything like that. The IT admins can come through after the fact and say, okay, you know, this workflow only can be executed by administrators in X group, and then they can apply that authorization over the level, you know, which is all the WIF foundation kind of stuff that has come out. We're built on top of that.
Awesome.
So,
okay.
So, with this one running, we built a little test client because in the real world, you know, some server would be actually doing this.
Yeah.
We have command line tools that do, and PowerShell tools that do the same thing as what the Process Studio just did in terms of building and deploying packages.
Okay.
But this one has an additional feature called test, and we have an internal service bus that registers all of our services, which is how services do workflow service to workflow service communication. And
okay.
That's a lot of the custom work that we've done to essentially build our own messaging infrastructure.
All right.
So what we did with that is figured, well, if we can do that, we might as well just write a little utility that allows us to invoke services and do a little serialization and stuff like that so that we can actually test these things without having to have a whole system around to start that workflow process all the time.
Okay.
So it's the same, kind of similar to the WCF test client,
sure,
but it works a little easier. So in this case, I've told that I want the service. It says, okay, here's my available method I can call. I'll say that. I don't have an existing instance IDs because I'm not re-invoking a workflow. I do that. And it just says it's complete and it starts all over again.
Right.
So in the meantime, you can actually see that it's actually inserting tracking records. It actually ran most of that workflow and it's kind of at the sleeping stage right now because it just saved an instance.
Oh, okay.
So obviously the last step of the process is, well, you know, I'm Mr. Process Owner, where the heck is my workflow and sure. how do I find it and all that kind of stuff. So what we have for that is actually a monitoring client. DigaMog also has to be turned on for this one, apparently. And this one is a pretty simple tool. Basically, you can search for workflows. I'm just going to go find everything because I know I don't have that many running.
Oh, okay.
I can see that I have a couple completed ones. I have a couple started. They were, you know, this one started right now.
Yeah.
And I know that it's currently in process. And if I want to see more details, I can click on this. And you can see on the bottom that it's loading the workflow, which takes a little while because it's actually pulling down a whole image of the workflow from the server, loading it up and getting the tracking data for it. So it'll take a couple minutes to, you know, get this, and then it's going to, you know, we have this happy little highlighting thing.
Nice.
That allows us to see. So this is the same rehosted designer surface, but this is using some of the demos that, you know, the dev teams have talked about in terms of being able to annotate the designer because it's all WPF.
Right.
So here I can actually see that, you know, my activity is executed. If I mouse over them, it'll actually tell me when it was executed at and some of the metadata that belongs to it.
Uh-huh.
And then I can actually see that we're kind of in this parallel stack right now. And I can keep drilling in. And I can actually see that my last one that I'm still running is my delay.
Okay.
And this is a couple minutes, so you know, maybe we can keep chatting, and eventually when the timeout expires and we're past 3 minutes, the work's going to complete running, and then the monitor actually is keep polling the server for updates and getting the new status of the workflow in the background so that this will actually show that the workflow went all the way through and completed.
Sweet. Now, you're using the tracking infrastructure, and you kind of have your own monitoring store.
Yeah, so we kind of added our own tracking participant, and then removed the default one. Then ours goes through our databases and things like that. We actually leveraged and did a lot of partner work with the App Fabric team to use some of the same data models and things that they use behind the scenes.
Okay.
We just decided not to go through the ETW tracking infrastructure because we wanted the host to be kind of isolated, and we didn't want to have it a dependency
on the event collector and all that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, that's very cool. And, you know, it's interesting is that, you know, people who did Workflow 3.5 often said that, you know, to do something like this would have been a nightmare. You know, just trying to change the look of the designer was incredibly difficult. But
but
this was pretty, this looks very different. I mean, you guys put all this background coloring and stuff on, but it wasn't that hard to do, though.
Not really. It was actually pretty easy with the templates. We actually had the same thing running in 3.5.
Yeah.
And just getting a solid colored border around it was an awful lot of work. This was probably about the same amount of work in the end, but you get a much more colorful experience out of it than that. Yeah. And I think you end up getting a lot more interaction with the surface, too.
Oh, see? There it goes.
So, yep, it completed.
Okay. Now, have you had some early adopters, some of your customers have been testing this or looking at it?
They've been looking at it. We haven't actually had any formal beta testers outside uses.
What do people think of this?
People like it.
Yeah.
People think the experience is much richer. They like you know, being able to do expressions. A lot of the developers complained initially about you know, the workflow design experience in 3.5 and not knowing what a dependency property was. And, trying to set up conditions and variables and all that was very opaque, especially like, you know, these if conditions were just embedded and you're like, okay, well, it went down one branch. What was it actually evaluating? I mean, here I can actually see, well, it went down the delay because I didn't give it a product ID or an order ID when I, you know, sent it in.
Right, right. I mean, I think it's very interesting to me, you know, a lot of times when we talk to developers, when I talk to developers about workflow, they go like, well, I could just write some code that does that. Mm-hmm. I mean, going back, of course, you guys implemented this in your existing product under Workflow 3.5, mm-hmm. right? But what did you do before that, before there was Workflow? What did your product do?
Well, we basically tried to write the integrations one chunk at a time.
Yeah.
So we didn't really have a solution to handle these large ones, which is one of the reasons we went down this development path in the first place, was that we, you know, our company acquired products that weren't originally ours, and then the options were build the infrastructure or, you know, have their infrastructure adapt to the other ones. And what we started doing was building system to system, you know, essentially BizTalk kind of transaction level integrations. But then all of a sudden it was like, well, okay, I've got A and I've got B, and A talks to B, but now A has to talk to C and C has to talk to B. And you ended up building so many system to system hooks that it just became very, very difficult to try to then have something that coordinated all this work across the system.
Okay. So these, I'm just trying to get the picture now, and you got your products, which are, like a lot of people, have sort of these isolated silos of products, and they're sort of these hooks that they have, these services that, you know, you could talk back and forth. But and then there's kind of external systems. And so every time you sell one of these, your customers, they're going to have, you know, different external systems and different pieces of their of your products that they buy because they don't need the whole thing or whatever. So you kind of have this wire up exercise, like as part of the deployment. And so you were saying there's these customization teams.
Yeah.
And so I take it that these are people who have maybe a mix of kind of industry experience and sort of product experience with your stuff, but they might be, you know, sort of kind of developers maybe, but not super great developers.
They're lower level developers, or they're people that are very skilled in IT, but you know how to do basic customization work, but don't like to sit in a development studio all day.
Right, right. So you're not going to tell them, like, go whip out Visual Studio and code up, you know, they don't want to do that. So they get these tools, and it gives them what they need.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, so this, you know, when people go, well, why would we put workflow, or why do people use workflow? This really filled a very unique niche for you guys. I mean, it solved a real problem that you had.
Yeah. I mean, and I think what we've tried to open it up for long term is we tried to build online versions of process repository and catalogs. I don't actually have it running on my laptop right now, but when all of these get registered, a developer can actually go browse that to see what services do I have available in my system. Is there documentation for it? And then in the process studio you saw, they can actually go and look that up and pull that in.
Oh,
so we're trying to build systems that are easy to do that. And then we want to build an online service that we can provide to our customers that they can log into and then pull templates for different processes down. So give them, you know, a good generic starting point. Oh, I have to do this recall. Okay, well, here's a good generic template. You know, and then even customize some of them for specific products. You know, if we notice that, you know, a typical customer that maybe has three of our product suites are always doing work and they're doing the same kind of process, then we'll even pre-can you know, the activities that are specific to those systems and say, well, here's a good template that involves these three systems. If you don't need the third one, go ahead, pull out all the activities that belong to that, but you could still just tweak it instead of having to start from scratch and try to wonder, oh, how do I do this?
So it seems to me, you know, you could kind of imagine, like a lot of products that were, you know, things were built before workflow, you essentially had to decide, well, how are we going to do this, you know, whatever that is. And the product does it a certain way, and that's just the way it is. And, you know, and then you tell your customer, well, this is the way it works. And they go, yeah, I'd like to do it this way. Say, tough, it works this way. You're going to have to change the way you do it. It just works this way or whatever, right? You could say that. But then with this kind of capability in place, it opens up the idea that instead of architecting my silo as kind of a complete end-to-end solution, I could compose it of little atoms, if you will, of functionality, right? And they're just little atoms that you could assemble in a way that makes sense to fit the customer's process. And it's building the atoms has been easy. Like, people could do that forever, but the assembly of the atoms into something that could be executed, something that you could understand what it's doing, when it's doing it, and, you know, like we saw here, I mean, that's huge. That's the hard part of this problem.
Yeah.
You know, because you guys, I mean, obviously live in a competitive world. You got competitors who are trying to beat you guys every day, and so, you know, your customers are wanting to keep the cost down. But really, in a product like yours, the cost of the initial software is just one piece. I mean, there's still this huge implementation cost, like taking what you guys give as a starting point and making it something that does the job. That's a big part, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and customization too. I mean, it becomes a continual process because, you know, just like, you know, your industry and what we do never really stands still very long.
Right.
Neither does, you know, our customers in terms of how they do warehousing or, you know, how they're moving products around. And as their systems change or get updated or, you know, modify themselves or as maybe their business processes change,
yeah.
you know, these have to change with them.
Right.
And providing a solution that's hard-coded and compiled and stuff like that means that a change to their business process now means they have to go spend, you know, several thousand dollars worth of consulting costs to update that business process.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to do is trying to say, you know, okay, hire our teams, hire the consultants to do that initial, you know, hard integration work and get the process in there. But
yeah.
then, you know, if you need to go add one or two little simple steps, you know, this will allow you to do that, create a new version, systems will pick up those new versions, and as long as you haven't kind of broken that shell of how the outside systems interact, the workflow will still continue to function. But, you know, maybe if you can change, you know, add an extra reminder.
Mm-hmm.
So that if Bob has to approve this and Bob's being real lazy,
mm-hmm.
then change the timeout so it reminds him to do it every 2 hours instead of every 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And what we try to do with this is also add the analytics and the reports on the end so that you know, you can see, okay, well, maybe the first version of this process took on average, you know, 5 days to complete.
Mm-hmm.
And we add this extra reminder, and now Bob's remembering, and it's only taking 3 days to complete this.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've allowed the customer to see an exact, you know, performance gain by the changes that they're making, or, you know, hopefully not a performance degradation, but if they add six extra steps that are always extraneous, it'll show them pretty quickly that there's something in there that's probably taking them too long.
Ah, that's fantastic. Well, you know, I think this is really, you know, in this category of software, that, you know, people talk about agility, and just agility is the property of a system or a business or a, you know, I think about a person who's agile, right? I mean, they can, you know, in a basketball game, they weave right through all the players and get to the basket or whatever. I mean, I think businesses need agility to be able, you know, when they recognize, hey, there's an opportunity, if we change the way we did this, we could shave, you know, 2% off of our costs. And, you know, when you look at the volume some of these guys do, it could be huge, huge money.
Mm-hmm.
And if they can do it in 2 weeks instead of 6 months,
mm-hmm.
That's big dollars, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Wow. So, okay, looking back,
mm-hmm.
if you had to start all over again, there are some people who are watching this who are like, we're just about to start doing workflow for the first time, and we think this is good, this is where we want to go. What would your advice to them be about where, you know, watch out for this or make sure you do that or...
Well, I think that there's definitely a lot of areas of the product that were done exceptionally well in this version and make, you know, the whole XAML-based loose model, I think, improves that whole world a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of areas that are a little bit more challenging still. If you actually are doing custom activities, authoring the activity code for the execution is
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
You know, great environment. Authoring the little designers that you see in front of you
yeah.
Have some things to be desired.
Okay.
You have to know WPF pretty well to be able to do it.
Yeah.
And especially if those activities need to validate something else in the flow,
yeah.
a lot of the API and the helper methods aren't there yet for it.
Okay.
So you kind of have to, you know, .NET Reflector kind of becomes your friend, and yeah. you go look at how, you know, some of the internal teams did it and copy some code and it works.
Good tip. So you want to, if you do think you're going to have to do a bunch of designer stuff, like are you talking just about rehosting the designer or even just building a custom activity designer?
Even look at like one of these delays, like these little write lines, those are pretty easy, but I don't have a send. Actually, I do have a send activity. So this send activity, when you drop it on the form, actually you can do a generate for receiving a reply.
Yeah.
And that actually goes and validates that it's okay within the sequence to do that.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's no API method publicly for outside developers to use to be able to validate that you're inside of a sequence or that you're inside of that.
And it took
a little tweaking around to actually go figuring out how it's done. And it's not too hard code to write, but...
Okay. So Reflector is your friend.
Yeah.
Go look up how they did it, and then you can figure it out.
A little copying, pasting, and you're done.
Okay. Excellent. Oh, that's good information. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us on Endpoint TV.
Thank you, Ron.
All right. And we'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.